Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good afternoon. This is Jody Lowe with the Leadership Lowdown, powered by You and Improved. Leadership Lowdown is a radio series dedicated to shining a spotlight on business leaders and sharing the real stories behind their rise to the top. We want to know the truth about what it takes to truly succeed in life and business. And we're here today to uncover these leaders' journeys, the pitfalls, the victories, and of course, all of those heartaches and triumphs in between. And I am so thrilled because I am here in studio sitting across from two gentlemen that I both adore and admire, Mr. Jim Mapstead, who is the president of Accurate Signs and Engraving. Welcome. So happy you're here today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And Mr. Randy Gibb, who is the dean of the Colangelo College of Business over at Grand Canyon University. So welcome, Randy.
Thanks.
Absolutely. We're glad to have you both. So I'm not sure how familiar you are with the Leadership Lowdown, but it is always our desire to really just hear all of your stories. And I thought I would start out with you today, Jim, because I know you've really had just such an easy rise to the top in your business. No pitfalls, nothing along the way. It's just been smooth sailing, if I understand correctly, right?
I inherited $1 million from my
Wrong story. No, so I do. And all joking aside, you've had quite a colorful career. My friend, and I would love for you to share a little bit with our listeners about your journey. I know you're from Phoenix originally or not?
I went to high school here.
Yeah.
My father was in the Air Force until I was 13, so we traveled around a lot, but
nice.
I wound up going to high school here. I wound up getting drafted from here.
Yes.
After I was in the Army, I traveled around the country for a few years and wound up at the U of A.
Nice.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit more about that. What did you study?
I was political science, international relations, which I'm sure will come as a shock to most people who know me.
Yeah, that's so surprising.
I was programs chair of Associated Pre-Law Students my junior year, and I was headed to law school. But I wound up quitting school just prior to my senior year to move to Washington, D.C. to work on the national campaign to stop the B-1 bomber. Because a B-1 bomber was just not a good airplane and never should have gotten off the drawing board. And there's a reason why four of them were built and they're rotting away in a field in South Dakota someplace right now. And Jimmy Carter wound up killing the program in 1978. And I did what any good political science, international relations major did. I became a bartender four blocks in the White House.
I love it. And then how did that translate into your business career from there?
I loved being a bartender. And I was really good at it. And I made a boatload of money. But it's a very physically demanding job.
Yeah.
You can only drink so much.
Yeah.
And I was hanging out with people my age who looked like they were 20 years older than me.
Sure.
And I knew that this wasn't my life.
Yep.
So I was going through Sears department store one day, going through the Craftsman tool department. I saw this radial arm saw and I go, that is really cool. And I'd never taken a woodworking class, never taken a shop class before in high school. But I wound up buying this radial arm saw because there was a color brochure on it, all these cool things that you could build. And I was like, wow, I could do this.
This would be neat.
And I set it up in the basement of my house and I started playing. And I quit bartending a couple of years later and started designing and building custom furniture.
No kidding. Just from walking through Sears one day.
Just walking through Sears one day.
And I really
had no business at all starting my own business because I had not a clue.
Interesting.
I knew nothing about a P&L, a balance sheet. I was very fortunate. One of my bar customers, though, was a CPA, and he was a partner with MB Harrington & Company, which was DC's largest independent accounting firm. And he was later instrumental in the merger with Laventhal & Horwath out of Philadelphia. And he did my books, and he set me on the right path for my first 2 years in business.
No kidding.
And I got extensive training from him on actually how to run a business.
Interesting. So one of your early mentors, I assume.
He was.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So tell us about that business. Is it custom furniture that you were building? Or?
Custom furniture, designing and building. I took on it. That was in 1981. In 1983, I took on a partner who used to be a boatwright in San Diego. We're still very good friends to this day. And in 1985, I wound up buying a lumberyard in Prince George's County, just south of Andrews Air Force Base, and 2 acres of land. And that was going to be our retirement.
Wow.
And in 1988, I bought a hardware store in Alexandria, Virginia. And in 1989, I built a hardware store in Frederick, Maryland.
Oh, my goodness. All started with a walk through Sears. It's amazing.
A walk through Sears, yeah.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Of all places.
Yeah, yeah.
And in 1990, I lost everything. We had 47 people working for us, and I lost everything in the recession.
Wasn't quite the smooth sailing journey that I I was painting.
We were highly leveraged at that time. And in the 1980s, OPM was the standard, other people's money was a standard buzzword. And we utilized that to the hilt. But we wound up losing everything. So my wife and I, who I met at the bar, by the way.
I didn't know that part of the story.
And we got married right in front of the Lincoln Memorial, right at the reflecting pool.
Oh, no kidding.
Which sounds really cool.
Yeah.
You know why we did it?
Why?
We had no money.
Yeah.
Because it was so expensive. Broke. And there are all these great places in D.C. to get married. There's a canal in Georgetown and Mount Vernon. They wanted money. I didn't have any money. It cost us $25 for a permit from the Department of Interior.
Perfect. That's
and it was
the
a great
it.
Thing. It was fabulous.
But so you lost everything in that?
Lost everything when the RTC took over one of the banks that we had a contract with a contracting firm in Virginia to do the third floor of an attorney's office. Mm-hmm. And we did all the millwork. We did all the wood bookcases. We did all the desks. We did a lot of work, like $83,000 worth of work. And the week before, this contracting company was going to go from permanent, from construction financing to permanent financing, their bank went out of business.
Oh my goodness.
And the RTC had 6 months to decide which notes that they were going to pick up and which they weren't. And none of the subs got paid on that job. And that what really put us under.
Right.
That coupled with the recession.
So what were your thoughts and feelings at that time, in that moment? I mean, that's everything coming, really crashing down all at once.
It was pretty devastating because we were riding high and mighty. We did about $1.3 million in revenue. We weren't a major large business, but we were of size in 1989.
Sure.
It was pretty devastating. It hurt the most putting 47 people out of work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody was looking at me like, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
You know? And I didn't have any answers.
Sure.
So Jill and I decided, we thought about moving to upstate New York. We thought about moving to Chicago. But at the end of the day, we thought, you know, we're going back to Phoenix. Her parents lived here and there was a business for sale, Betty's Accurate Engraving.
Betty's Accurate Engraving. Oh, I love this.
It was a mom and pop shop.
Can I ask a quick question?
Of course.
Please.
I'm really impressed. So with no business, so you had a real life experience MBA, basically, is what you got on your own.
Yeah.
What was your higher purpose? What problem did you solve? What niche did you bring in your business that nobody else was doing? Because you grew this business without a background, and yet you did very well. You know, I mean, the recession was bigger than you. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how did you do it so well? Did you have better customer service? Did you... more responsive, higher quality products?
Well, I would love to say that it was just my intellect and unbelievable leadership that
besides
did this.
Those.
I was very blessed to have some really smart people around me. And that continues to this day as well. I tell budding business owners and budding entrepreneurs, get people around you who will talk straight to you. And to this day, I have a pretty successful company. Drive a nice car, have a nice home, and people see where I am. And they assume that it's always been a life of leisure for me, which isn't the case. And I'm quick to point out that I've been through a personal and a business bankruptcy. It is not pretty doing that. And I don't want to be there again. So to this day, I have a financial planner, my banker, a CPA, and I have three business advisors who are phenomenally successful in their own right around the country. And every month I send them my P&L and balance sheet. Every quarter I send them my statements with notes. And at the first week of January every year, I send them a detailed explanation on what happened the previous year and what I'm projecting for the next year. And quite frankly, I don't make a business decision without consulting them first. Because as business owners, we can justify any decision we want to make.
Absolutely.
I want to know, what am I not seeing? What am I missing? What am I... you know, what do you see in the long term that could impact this decision that I'm looking to make? And I want their feedback. And what I love about all six of them is that they talk very straight to me. And sometimes they'll say, are you on drugs? What are you thinking? But most of the time we will have really good conversations about this makes sense. And you can go ahead and do that. I didn't buy my car without consulting them first.
Isn't that great?
I'm
to
blessed.
Have that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So thanks for the question.
Yeah. No, that's
it's true. Important for entrepreneurs to know you need to get people around you who are smarter than you and who will talk straight to you.
Absolutely. And I do believe, you know, obviously being an entrepreneur and in that same right, there's so much, you see the sizzle and the glamour and the lifestyle and, oh no, boss. And isn't this amazing? And without that, you know, so many entrepreneurs are wired to just follow their passions and their dreams and their creativity, yet without the trusted advisors and the people that you can really count on to set you straight and keep your head in the game and looking at the numbers and the financials and the things that, that do matter within the business, along with, you know, the brilliance that, that, you know, that entrepreneur brings. It's absolutely true. So are you a part of groups or organizations like that, the Vistages and those sorts of organizations as well? Or is this your tribe?
I'm not a member. I'm a big believer in Vistage. Mm-hmm. I think it's really smart because I don't think that most people have the opportunity or seek the opportunity mm-hmm. that I have to mm-hmm. surround themselves with advisors. I am very impressed mm-hmm. with the Vistage model. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to be able to get feedback from other CEOs and even in daily conversations with other CEOs mm-hmm. that I'm friends with, you know, something will come up and I'll say, what, you know, this is happening in my business. Have you ever encountered something like this?
Right.
And in Vistage, like in a lot of other groups, everybody has encountered the same kind of situations.
Exactly. Yep.
Very similar situations. And my preference is not to reinvent the wheel. I'd rather plagiarize and use other people's intellect
right.
and say, okay, well, tell me what to do.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. What did you do and what worked?
It's not rocket surgery.
Yes, exactly. Rocket surgery. I love it. So real quick, back to Betty's, because I want to hear how this happened. So how did you come across this business and what spoke to you about this business? How did that all transpire?
It was a business for sale and it mm-hmm. was owned by my in-laws. They okay. were looking to retire uh-huh. and I asked to see the financials. Mm-hmm. So they sent me the financials, and this is in 1990. And I came out and I visited in 91, mm-hmm. kind of took a look at their, it was a small mom and pop operation. They weren't even doing $90,000 a year in business. It was mm-hmm. very small. But I'd been through a couple leveraged buyouts before, mm-hmm. and I knew that with some upgrade in technology, with some marketing, that I could make a go of this.
Yeah.
But I didn't know an engraved sign from a goat. I have no idea what engraved signs were.
Sure.
But the financials looked impressive.
Nice.
Initially, I thought that they were skimming money or laundering money or something. It right. was like, all right, so these numbers look really good. And I did some analysis and saw that if for every dollar increase in revenues, I could bring 59 cents to the bottom line.
Wow.
And that was impressive to me. Yeah. That's exactly yeah. what I said. Okay, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And so we've just built it over the years.
Isn't that? And so you dropped the Betty's name.
Yeah. Drop Betty's name, and it was originally Accurate Engraving, and then because we do more than, people are always unsure as far as what engraving actually
yeah,
is.
Yeah, share with us, what is it, what is your product line, or what is your biggest piece of business?
We do commercial and industrial engraving. So 84% of our revenues today come from solar panel installers around the country, and we make up that, we're the nation's largest supplier of laser engraved tags to the solar industry.
Unbelievable. Talk about a niche.
Yeah, it is very much a niche market. These are tags. They're typically about 1 inch by 3 inch. We laser engrave them. There's double face tape on the backside. And these are tags that go not on the panels themselves, but on the associated equipment in every residential and commercial installation.
Wow.
So inverters and disconnects. And quite frankly, I'm not sure what all of this stuff means or does, but
right.
they just email orders over to us and
that's a pretty beautiful thing, isn't that? How did you get into that niche of business, or where did that come from?
Yeah, that's a great question. In 2008, when the recession occurred, it was the 2/3 of my revenues were coming from electrical contractors around the state, because electrical contractors use a very similar laser engraved tag. Mm-hmm. And they say things like panel A, 120/240 volt, 3-phase, 4-wire. And again, I have no idea what this stuff means.
But it sounded very impressive.
It sounded like I knew what I was talking about.
It totally did.
October 2nd of that year, when the stock market lost 555 points, and that was the second time within 2 weeks that the market had dropped over 500 points. And that was a precipitous drop. And the mm-hmm. 500 points these days is a big deal, but 500 points when the market hadn't hit 10,000 yet was a really big deal. And on October 2nd, I got my guys together and I said, okay, where are we going? Because there isn't going to be any money mm-hmm. for T&I. There's not going to be any money for new construction. Our electrical contracting business is going away within 60 to 90 days. Mm-hmm. Where are we going? And collectively, we decided to go after the solar panel industry because they used a similar tag.
Brilliant.
It was kind of a nascent business in 2008. It was just kind of it certainly hadn't reached a tipping point
yet. Sure,
And we went on an aggressive marketing campaign, inexpensive, and we were able to pick up a number of customers. And about a year later, we picked up SolarCity as a national account.
Wow.
And Tesla is now Tesla, merged with SolarCity. And there are large national, we ship tags to all their warehouses from Hawaii to Massachusetts.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It was what a true, true success story. I just love hearing this because I think it not only fosters hope and excitement, but it also is the true trials and tribulations of what it takes to get to, you know, to your point, I think a lot of people see your success and know obviously your involvement in politics and a lot of the things that you are so actively a part of in the Valley and outside of the Valley. And it's oftentimes, I think, just easy to assume, oh gosh, it's always, like you said, been a life of leisure. It's come easy, or, you know, he has something special that, you know, was blessed with at birth. And it's really.
I wish that were the case because there should be a whole lot of easier than
you know what? But then we wouldn't have a show to talk about these wonderful stories and shed the light on what really happened. So it's unbelievable. And now, outside of your phenomenal business, I know that you're actively involved in many, many things. So where's your kind of heart space for the things that you're involved in? Share a little bit because you're highly involved.
I've been very fortunate that I built the business to a point where my staff doesn't need me anymore.
Yeah.
As much as I try and convince them otherwise, I walk in the morning and say, you need me to? No, we're good. We're good.
So you don't have to show up much anymore. I don't get to show up much, I guess is a better way of phrasing it.
I'm a big believer in giving people responsibility.
Yep.
I'm not a micromanager. Mm-hmm. I don't look over people's shoulders. Mm-hmm. If there is a decision made in my office that I find out after the fact that I might have disagreed with, I'll sit down and we'll have a conversation. Mm-hmm. I'll ask them, so how did you come to this decision? Why did you say this? Mm-hmm. Because I might have said something different. Mm-hmm. And it's never accusatory or I just want to know what their thinking process is for how they arrived at that. I would never chastise somebody for making a decision because, quite frankly, I've given them responsibility so that I can go out and play in the community and that I get to travel with my wife as well.
Yes. Yes. Well, talking about conscious leadership earlier, that's to that point perfectly and empowering others to make those decisions and just having an honest conversation should something go sideways.
Yeah.
Definitely brings that into the organization.
Jim, I'm curious. So in 1990, the recession hit, your business hit hard times. How much did you look back on that in early 08 when you saw things coming? Were there some good lessons learned? Because it sounds like you made a really good decision.
It was very fortuitous. And that was a team decision as well. I would like to say that. I would love to claim. But it was a team decision that we arrived at that. And it scared me. I mean, in 2008, there were a lot of us. And we had conversations internally. We went into AFAB route. You know, can we do anything for a buck? Mm-hmm. And we talked about doing some printing, like typical sign companies do, doing vinyl work on windows, doing banners, doing things like that. And I told my guys, I said, you know, we do engraving really well. And I think our focus needs to be on that. I don't want to go into competition with 300 other sign companies in the Valley, but it was a very scary time. I had confidence that we could pull out of this. But in 2008, there were so many question marks around what was going to happen with the economy, with a world economy for that matter. And we had no idea how long that was going to last. So it was very fortuitous that we did what we did.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that getting through that, do you attribute it to your past experience more? Or was there, obviously you've had mentors along the way, I'm certain, but was it more of just a certain mindset that was instilled in you or things that you'd learned along the way through experience or more through education or both?
I'm not sure I could attribute exactly what led to that decision other than the fact there's a great book that Robin Crow wrote called Jump and the Net Will Appear. And it's one of my all-time favorite books. And it's for people, and I give this book out frequently to people who are thinking about starting their own business, but have some trepidation about, you know, I'm really comfortable or I make a lot of money or I have health insurance and I'm not sure. And I say, go for it. Jump. And this book outlines what happened in Robin Crow's life and how he just jumped and made the leap into entrepreneurship and has become very successful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that you even mentioned that quote. I for years over my desk had "leap and the net will appear," which is yes. Zen thing over my desk, and definitely follow that mantra very much so. So it's interesting because I think the life experience paves the way, but I also think there's a gut and instinctual head and heart piece that plays into it too. So on the Leadership Lowdown, there's something that I love to do with each guest, and you may be familiar with the TV show Inside the Actor's Studio. Did you ever watch that on Bravo? Well, it's a TV show, and they interview different superstar actors and actresses. And the questions that are asked at the end of the show come from actually originally a French talk show. And these questions are not only fun, but also a little off the cuff. So they're both shaking their heads. No, they haven't heard these questions. So this is exciting because this is the off the cuff part, and any answer is okay.
Nervous?
And no, you should not be nervous.
Okay, good.
But the best part and what I love the most is the real answers to these questions, I think, are the heart of who you are and how you show up in this world. So if you're okay with me playing, you're going to get a little bit. Randy gets a little bit of a head start, but you're not allowed to, think too much ahead. You can still keep your headset on. So, Jim, we'll start with you. What is your favorite word?
My favorite word is can.
Can. Love it. So what is your least favorite word?
Can't.
That was pretty easy. That was pretty easy.
I'll share with you. My daughter, when she was in second grade, she had the kind of teacher that you remember the rest of your life.
Yes.
Her name was Michelle Bartel. And Michelle, first week of class, had all the kids write down the word can't on a piece of paper. And they went out onto the playground and they buried these words. And I thought that was just the most brilliant exercise.
Oh, how powerful.
Especially for powerful for a second grader.
Oh,
exactly.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And I'm sure it's something she remembers today.
Absolutely.
Oh, isn't that neat? I love that. Ooh, I love that. Next question for you. What turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
Wine.
No. I absolutely knew in my gut that was going to come out of your mouth. I knew it would be wine. This gentleman loves wine, and good wine, really, really good wine, a lot.
I'm passionate about nonprofits,
mm-hmm.
and I've been fortunate to sit on a number of boards
yes.
in the Valley.
Yes, you have. Which, do you want to share a little bit about that?
I'm the incoming board chair for Big Brothers Big Sisters mm-hmm. of Central Arizona, and I'm the vice chair of the Herberger Theater Center.
So right exciting. Now. So exciting. Congratulations.
Thanks. I was board chair for 5 years of Local First Arizona, yeah. which is a great dynamic organization. Very powerful.
Yeah. Well, yeah. the way that you contribute back to this community is remarkable.
Thank you.
So what turns you off?
Negative people.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Do you best to steer clear?
Yeah, life's too short to surround myself with people who dwell in the negative.
Absolutely. I'm with you, my friend. Okay, so this is internet radio, so you are allowed to answer this question should you choose. What is your favorite curse word?
Probably the F-bomb.
Yeah. I love that. You still made it politically correct there.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, it's just the right word for you. I love it.
Yeah.
What sound or noise do you love?
My wife's laugh.
And talking about your wife.
Did I get points?
You got so okay, many great. Brownie points right That's there, fair. And I'm sure she is
points.
Just cheering right now. Yes, she's cheering you on. The relationship that the two of you have is so beautiful, and having the pleasure of knowing both of you now for some time, Jill is so remarkable. And what a perfect pairing, because talking about people who give back and are all heart, it is exemplified in your beautiful wife, who you refer to as?
The babe.
The babe. He does not call her Jill. It's the babe. Always the babe. It's the cutest thing. The two of them are absolutely adorable.
Well,
so.
Cute is code word for old, too.
No. It's not code word for old at all. At all. Not at all. What sound or noise do you hate?
Some political speeches.
Okay. Should we leave it at that?
You can leave it at that.
Okay. Some political speeches. We'll go with that. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Airline pilot.
Ah. Interesting. We happen to have a
love
Air
to
Force.
Fly.
Do you?
Love, love, love.
Yeah.
Whatever size plane.
Yeah.
Love to fly.
Yeah. Do you do it often?
As frequently as we can.
Nice. Nice. I did not know that. Oh, I just got a little gem right there. Love it. And what profession would you not like to do?
Sewer cleaner.
That would be pretty bad. I'm with you. Yeah. We don't even need to go there.
These are French questions.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
This is crazy French, I tell you. And if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
so soon?
I love it. I love it. Mr. Mapstead, you are certainly, you have such a beautiful heart. I have been really gifted in getting to know you and Jill, and I look forward to years of friendship to come. I really admire you so, so much, and I really appreciate you making time to be here today. Are you able to stick around and stay with us while we chat with Randy?
I am. Okay. That's very generous of you. Thank you.
Absolutely. And by the way, if people want to connect with you, is there a best way to learn more about whether it's you or your business or some of the nonprofit work that you do? How do they best reach you?
Jim@AccurateSigns.com.
That's pretty easy. Got it. Perfect, perfect. Well, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you.
And Mr. Randy Gibb, turning the tables to you, my friend.
I don't know if I'll be as funny and clever.
Oh, you know what? Yes, you are. And you know what?
Good luck with the French questions.
Yeah. Teeing you up for that one. Teeing you up for that one. Well, you know, it's interesting because it always happens. And, you know, we can laugh about this offline, but each and every time we host the Leadership Lowdown, more often than not, the guests don't know each other. And it happens to be that some beautiful pairing happens and there's some connection that we never knew or expected. And then hearing you talk about your father and the Air Force, and I'm thinking, and there you have it. Here we go. Yeah. It's just amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, that was his first question. The bases I was at?
Yeah.
I was like, this guy knows something about the Air Force.
Yeah, there's something here. So tell us.
Sadly, most people today don't have a connection to the military. It's a quickly shrinking percentage of Americans who have a direct connection.
That is true. That is true. And tell us about that, Randy, because your start was not in business.
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, I just want to say I have so much respect for Jim as a business, successful businessman that always involves lots of adversity to overcome. But I think, you know, you're providing value to society and creating a business, a service, a good that's needed.
Yeah.
Creating jobs. I think there's nothing cooler than being able to give somebody a job.
Yeah.
And that's, so I can see, you know, your point when you're talking about back in 1990 with 47 people who looked to you for a paycheck to take care of their family. And that's what's so honorable about business people is what they provide.
Absolutely.
And going back to our earlier conscious capitalism concept is jobs. The capitalism system today can solve society's problems and can take it to scale. And you've done that over time. So thank you.
Yeah,
thanks for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So give us some of the backstory. Of course, we want to jump into so many other things as well. But how did you get to where you are? And tell us about the military and all of the early days.
It seems like another life ago because I've had to kind of reinvent myself. But I wanted out of Wisconsin. So I went to the Air Force Academy.
Okay.
And I'd never been there before until the day I had to start basic training.
And do you come from a military family?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
I was pretty clueless. So then when I got there, I didn't go there to fly, but I'm a pretty type A competitive. So I was like, all right, everybody here goes to the pilot training, then so will I.
Right. Off I go.
So I ended up having a ball at the academy, as much fun as you can have, but I was exposed to all different types of people. You know, meet people from all over the country, got involved with a lot of different things. Then went off to pilot training right here in Phoenix, Arizona, at Air Force Base. In the 80s, it was the world's largest pilot training.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Location. And that set me off my career. I met my wife here. So yeah, just loved it. I absolutely love teaching. And it's so funny that, right, even though I've reinvented myself, I'm still teaching.
Right.
Over my whole career, it was 26 years in the Air Force. I was a coach, I was a teacher, I was a commander of a flying squadron. Now as a dean of college, it's teaching.
Yeah, that's definitely at the core. I love it.
Yeah.
And what brought you out of the military?
Well, it was about my 22-year point. Mm-hmm. I was at the Air Force Academy. Absolutely loved it. We were back in Colorado Springs. And I just knew it was time to move on. The Air Force is amazing at providing educational opportunities. So I've got a couple master's degrees and a PhD that the Air Force sponsored.
Wow.
And, but then every time you get a degree, you serve that much longer. So I had the opportunity to fly six different airplanes.
Wow.
Go all over the world. Learned a lot about leadership.
Mm-hmm.
That's what took me to 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then the deal was to return my wife back to Phoenix after all those years and 10 some moves.
Wow.
So brought everybody back here. And it's funny. Some people are like, well, why are you moving to Phoenix? Why aren't you you know, looking for a job elsewhere. And I go, well, because we love Phoenix and we want to be back here. It was like home. Because every year, no matter where we lived, whether it was in Delaware, Rhode Island, Colorado, Texas, we would come to Phoenix for every holiday. I was like, I figure I can find a job somewhere in Phoenix.
Yeah.
in a variety of buckets that I was trying to figure out and crafting each resume.
Sure.
So I just got involved with higher education. So I'd finished as a department chair for a year at Behavioral Sciences and Leadership Department at the Air Force Academy. Mm-hmm. And then I spent a year in Ohio as a human systems. It had a title of senior military professor at the Air Force Institute of Technology in Dayton at Wright-Patterson. So I was kind of on this academic path. Research slash higher education path. So that led me to, I did a year of the Apollo group, went to ASU. I thought that was going to be my dream job. I was there working with people I'd done my PhD research with. And then it's funny how life works. My my son's former middle school principal was at Grand Canyon University and introduced me to the provost. They were starting a engineering school at Grand Canyon University. And my PhD is industrial engineering, human factors. And I met the president, Brian Mueller. And after he met me, he was like, well, why can't he run the business school? So they'd been looking for a business dean, I guess, for 2 years. And then they called me back and I said, did I misrepresent myself? I'm not an academic business person at all. And they said, well, we actually like that about you. And that's Brian Mueller is non-traditional in everything he does.
Yes.
And his vision was to create entrepreneurial engineers. His vision was to create a university where there's not stovepipes between the colleges. I spent significant time working with the engineering. It's the College of Science, Engineering, and Technology. We meet with companies all over the valley. And they need business people. They need programmers. They need coders. They need IT people. They need engineers. And we have business faculty teaching engineering courses, team innovation experience. So we teach students from the get-go to be innovative and creative, but solve a problem. And have a foundation early in your college career to think about scaling it to create a business. So, I mean, that was Brian Mueller's vision all along, was to take this goofy Air Force pilot who has an engineering background, who's commanded some flying squadrons, to run a business school, because we have phenomenal accounting teachers and economics and finance. I think they like me because they know I don't know anything about those topics.
Yeah.
Just like you said, I don't get in their way.
Yeah.
So my job is to be a servant leader and give them the resources so they can do their job and then get out of the way so they can do their job.
Absolutely. And what were your thoughts when this was first presented to you? I mean, was your head spinning, or were you thinking, yep, this feels right? Or what were you thinking? Because it was obviously so different.
Yeah. And it just, a lot of it goes back to, since we're, this is the leadership lowdown, is how the Air Force also viewed leadership. Is the two squadrons I commanded, I had never flown the airplane before. I'd never done that particular mission. I'd never been at that base. So I walked in brand new as the new guy. And it really teaches you to be humble. It teaches you to ask the right questions, which is normally just why. And if the answer is, we've always done it that way, that's not the right answer. And, you know, what is the justification? Because you find out your team, your experts, they know why. They just had to articulate it to the dumb new guy. And so twice I had to do that. I had to learn a whole new mission. And in the end, leadership is leadership and taking care of people. So it was like, okay, well, here we go. Let's do this again.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about this.
Different context.
But I need to be accountable and learn the business and be a steward of the organization.
Sure.
I think that's what else, because the Air Force, I had the privilege and honor to be a commander of the 99th Flying Training Squadron, which has legacy roots to the Tuskegee Airmen. So talk about stewardship. That organization is bigger than one person will ever be. It was around during World War II. It's going to be around for years to come. So my 18 months as commander was to do the best I could to make changes, make improvements for the benefit of the people in the mission. And then knowing I was going to hand it off to somebody else and they were going to even make it better than I left it to them.
Right.
So this whole idea of stewardship as part of a servant leader is something that, you know, I take back to what I learned in the Air Force.
Absolutely. And yeah, Jim.
I have a question. It seems that one of the reasons that made you so successful as a commander of squadrons is that you appear to be a lifelong learner, that you are constantly learning about new things, that if given your druthers, would you go to school for the rest of your life and just learn new things?
I don't know. I really have learned at the age. That's why I have so much respect for what you've done is, you know, at the age of 49-ish, I was like, God, I love entrepreneurism. I wish I would have started my own business. So maybe it's just new challenges. Maybe that goes back to the competitive side of me, is I really enjoy, all right, let's figure this out. I don't know anything about it. So I guess, yeah, lifelong learning. But it's certainly, look how much you can learn without being just experiences and meeting new people. Absolutely. Since everybody certainly has a cool story to share.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yours is. And, you know, I know you mentioned servant leadership and earlier you touched on conscious capitalism. I know that that's something very near and dear to your heart as well as mine. So share a little bit about your involvement and what it all really means to you. And actually, there's probably many people that aren't familiar with what this whole movement's about.
Right. It's about 10 years ago, Raj Sisodia and John Mackey. Raj is an academic PhD at Babson College, global business guy. He wrote a book with John Mackey, co-founder of Whole Foods. And it really is just a new narrative to what's needed today is that business is an amazing thing. It can change lives. It can bring people out of poverty. It can improve communities. And you have to invest in people and ideas because business creates value. And earlier, we talked about giving somebody a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I got involved, 4 or 5 years ago. And got to meet more people and then was invited onto the Arizona Conscious Capitalism Board. So there's a small team of us that try and just serve others. And we're all ambassadors.
Absolutely.
For this movement that capitalism is a great thing in the free market system. You know, it matters how you make money and you need to make revenue. You need to generate profits. You just have to do it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to reinvest those profits in your people, back in your business, in your community, you know, with big brothers, big sisters, your work. They're local first, right? You wouldn't have the ability to do that had you not been profitable and run a successful business with your actual sign company.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to do well here so you can help others. And you can help others through different charitable causes, through different not-for-profits, or just through your own business efforts. And I presume your company does community service work, right? I mean, there's a culture in a spirit that companies are providing. And there's just really excited to then integrate that into the Colangelo College of Business curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
So what's so fun is these students today that are the millennials, they're so aware, they're so conscious, they have a heart to serve.
Mm-hmm.
They're just great young men and women, and they're all in on this.
Mm-hmm.
So to you business owners out there, these students want value alignment.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking to work for companies that align with their passion and mission in life.
Absolutely.
And if you don't have a higher purpose with your business, if you can't articulate it, you may have trouble finding the talent that you need and want in today's growing talent pool workforce.
And what do you attribute this big shift to, Randy? Because you see this on a daily basis. Where do you see this big conscious shift in these millennials and younger?
I think it's just the availability of knowledge of what's going on and awareness. I mean, we've all gotten much more conscious and aware of our actions and the consequences that they have or may or may not have. Growing up in Wisconsin, it was pretty sheltered. What happened in our own little town, that was about it.
Right.
So they're just outstanding young men and women who really want to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I know companies need to change their culture. You know, Larry Fink just came out, CEO of BlackRock, challenging. You know, they're one of the largest wealth management companies in the world. And in his Q1 2018 letter, he challenged all the investors to have a purpose in their business and that they need to consider their community as one of their stakeholders and be accountable for their actions. So that was a big step for a major Wall Street player to make that kind of comment. Purpose.
Absolutely. And how does GCU incorporate that?
Well, what's awesome to be at Grand Canyon University is the entrepreneurial feel of everything that we do. I mean, no one ever says, Randy, don't do that. It's a dumb idea. It's like, okay, if you're going to do it at a gold standard, because that's what Mr. Colangelo would require and expect. And it has to be what's best for our students. So we have this idea called Lopes First, that, you know, we live and work on this beautiful campus here in Phoenix because of our students. So they have to be at the center of all our decisions. So we're not only integrating conscious capitalism into our curriculum, but we're also modeling it to our students in terms of what the campus is doing in the West Valley with neighborhoods and homes and making it a safer place to live, investing Habitat for Humanity, one of the largest partnerships in the world, trying to improve 700 homes in the neighborhood.
Wow.
Crime statistics are down. Home values are up. We've invested in the local schools. Our students are tutoring and becoming mentors with the high school kids. So it's just that simple. Take a high school kid and a college student, let them meet a couple times a week, and they're talking about math, they're talking about science and writing, but they're also talking about future and vision and where they could see themselves.
Yeah.
And then jobs. My first week in the job, we bought a hotel. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know anything about a hotel. So what do? You hire someone who does. Surround yourself with a good team, as you'd mentioned earlier, Jim. And our first couple employees were through Love International Church. So now they're just not employees from the neighborhood working at a hotel. They're working for a university. So their children have educational benefits to Grand Canyon University.
That's great.
It's amazing.
So same, we took over a 30-year lease with the Merivale Golf Course. We invested money, fix it up. They just don't work for a city golf course. They work for a university. It just, we're trying to just bring the West Valley back to what it was a thriving middle-class community. So the students are seeing what's going on at the university is what, how the university can make an impact, a positive, immediate impact on a neighborhood. Not, you know, like, okay, 7 years from now, you know, the investment in the university will have this return for the community. Well, it's happening immediately. And President Mueller's vision is that, you know, years from now, kids will come back to Phoenix and say, hey, I was a part of this. This was as much as my college educational experience as being in a classroom and learning about accounting and economics as building homes and, you know, painting houses on the weekends. So it goes back to the heart to serve.
Absolutely.
These students have.
Absolutely. Well, and I was blessed to recently hear him speak, Mr. Mueller, at Arizona Business Leaders, another organization I'm a part of. And his driving passion and his absolute giving heart and what he's creating and wanting to create more of and what has already been done is so remarkable. And what he's instilling in the leadership at the school and of course the students as well is something that is so profound and so exciting. And to know that there's a whole nother choice, if you will, in the landscape of education.
And the Southwest, the economy of Arizona. I mean, there's three fabulous state universities in Arizona, but to have a fourth private university, a private Christian school that didn't cost the taxpayers a cent. And now we're putting out, you know, thousands of graduates a year, talents in the workforce. His passion to really move the needle.
Absolutely. And, it's palpable.
And the other fun part is that we can pivot. We're pretty agile as a private Christian school. We meet with industry all the time. You know, what is it industry needs, what kind of talent, and we work all the time to make sure they are really, in a sense, accrediting us. Because by hiring our students, if we've produced students with the talent and skills that they want, is what, you know, the hard and soft skills, then we're making an impact very quickly. And that's the fun to be part of this is to delivering what the economy needs and what the community needs.
Yeah,
absolutely. So before we jump into our fun questions, what's next for you and what you see in your role?
Oh, I just hope I keep doing what I'm doing. I absolutely love my job.
Yeah. You've been there how long now?
It's coming up on 4 years.
4 years.
I cannot believe how fast it's gone. I feel super blessed to work with a guy like a gentleman like Mr. Jerry Colangelo. I've personally escorted him to 50 classes. His message is faith, family, friends, and community. He tells college students to put devices down and look people in the eye, that life is relational. So he's not just a name on a building. He is so integrated and involved with our campus and our students.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful to hear?
He's certainly been a blessing in the Valley.
Right. Yeah. He has, you know, we built a museum to honor him. It's right next to our arena. And I just want to continue to work with him, grow, and make the Colangelo College of Business and Grand Canyon University better than it is today.
It's incredible. Well, you all are doing a fantastic job and under obviously supreme leadership
right.
like you.
Yes. With Mr. Wheeler.
Well,
yes,
all of you, all of you. Takes a village. I'm sure he would yes. say the same. So let's jump into some fun questions for you now, my friend. What is your favorite word, Randy Gibb?
It's not fair. I had time to think about it. I was thinking energy. I like energy.
Ooh,
I like
energy.
Enthusiasm and energy to bring it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Goes back to the competitive spirit.
Yeah. And life is, you know, I used to say my high school son. So my wife, Jill, also.
Ah, there you go.
I don't call her the babe. I just call her Jill. I feel bad. I don't have a cool nickname.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sure you could adopt it.
Talk to my son when he was a teenager as, you know, life is about attitude. So mm-hmm. attitude and energy are kind of things yeah. that I kind of look at as
they go hand in hand. Yeah, absolutely.
Success.
Absolutely. So energy is the favorite word. What's your least favorite word?
Yeah, just lack of effort. It's like, come on. Because I'm kind of a grinder. I'm not exceptionally good at anything. I just think I'm going to out-hustle you, out-work you.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I think people have always, you can surprise people.
Yeah.
If they underestimate anybody who's not willing to put in that effort.
Yeah.
Who lacks the energy.
Yeah. It's a lack. I love it. What turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
Well, I really think serving others. Mm-hmm. The hope. I mean, the world is an amazing place and there's so many awesome people. And we have problems that we have to work together. And that's where people coming together, forming businesses, and solving the world's problems. Mm-hmm. So really service to all.
Yeah. That is truly in your heart. What turns you off?
Yeah. Just anybody who's not willing to pitch in, I guess.
Yeah.
So
people that sit on the sidelines and
lack of effort.
Yeah.
Going back to the first question.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a favorite curse word?
Not really.
No.
I think I've always been made fun of because I don't talk like a fighter pilot.
Yeah. Keeping it clean. The fighter pilot that keeps it clean. I love it. What sound or noise do you love?
You know, laughter was just such a great one. I really thought I could talk about a wine opener, the cork.
Oh,
out of
cork
a bottle
popping.
Of wine.
Yeah. Yes.
I thought that was going to be your response.
Yeah.
I missed that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
My youngest daughter, Eva, has got a great belly laugh on her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, your kid's laughing.
There's something
it's
special.
Pretty
there's
awesome.
Something pretty
yes.
magical. I thought it was going to be something with a fighter pilot, sound. No.
No, not
yeah.
at all.
All about laughter.
Okay. The worst noise would be your engine winding down.
That's the one you hate?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be one to hate.
Right. When it gets
that's
too
never
quiet.
A good thing.
Yeah, that's not good. That's right. not good. Yeah, that would be the one to hate. So what profession other than your own would you love to attempt?
Well, to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I'm around these students and they have so much energy and passion and they have so many ideas. They kind of have sometimes the problem of the bright, shiny object syndrome.
Sure, sure, sure.
So you want them just focus.
Yeah.
But I would. Going all the way, you know, it's funny, right? You have no regrets.
Right.
And I love everything I've done in my life. It's got me here. I'm, you know, proud of being in the Air Force. Sort of glad it's over now. Mm-hmm. Somebody else can be the blanket of freedom. Mm-hmm. It's like the joke. But no, to be an entrepreneur, to, you know, change, walk in gym shoes would be pretty cool.
Yeah. And do you know what type of business or do you, you know,
no clue,
but just something of your own that way.
Right.
Yeah. I love it. And what profession would you not like to attempt?
Well, I'll say airline pilot because I actually, you know, I considered that, but I was gone so much in the Air Force and I thought, well, so it's funny. I distinctly, when we moved to Phoenix, I was like, I'm not going to do
that. Not going to do that.
It was a conscious decision to be home every night.
Love it.
See my little girls.
It's great.
It's
absolutely perfect.
So nothing against that profession because I got all my buddies are doing it.
Right. Nothing wrong with it. But, and real quick, you have, is it four children?
Four kids.
And they're all girls, did you say?
No.
Oh.
And I know this sounds weird. An 18-year spread, four kids, three girls and one boy.
Oh, how fantastic.
So, yeah.
And so your oldest is how old?
We go from 28 to 10.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Oh my goodness.
No. Your wife's busier than you and I put together.
Yeah, that's busy. That is busy. Absolutely. Wow. Well, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Yes, indeed it does. And would hope he'd say, thanks for serving or something like that.
Yeah,
right? I mean, did I Did I do what was expected of me?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question in any of our minds, and anyone that knows you knows that you have a servant's heart absolutely through and through. And I thank you again, too. I know how busy you are and how...
This is fun. I want to thank you. Getting us together.
It's always magical what happens in this studio, with the people that connect and the stories that we get to share. And that's really the point of it, is to be able to really shine a light on the fabulous local stories of leaders that people may not know. And how did you get there? And all these wonderful things. I really appreciate you sharing your background. If people want to connect with you or the college, or how do they best do that?
Yeah, please. It's randy.gibb@gcu.edu.
Awesome.
So it's not Andy Gibbs or BGs.
Yeah, I'm sure you get that just a million times. Yeah.
But just simply randy.gibb.
Randy.gibb. Wonderful. Well, and I thank you both so much. To leave our listeners with one last tip, you know, it is the Leadership Lowdown for a reason, not just because Lowe's my last name, but because I want to give our listeners a tip. So what is it that you could leave our listeners with that is the Leadership Lowdown for you? What's that one thing, if you could impart one little bit of insight or knowledge from your experience, what would that be?
Ask questions.
Nice. That's perfect.
You're really good at that. Mm-hmm. Randy, because you had to do that when you went into your command post, not knowing anything about the command itself.
You're like, just leave it at that.
And the only way to learn is to ask questions about that. And I think that's, again, I go back to, as business owners, we think that we know a lot. Mm-hmm. And especially as guys, we think we really know a lot. And then that old joke about, sometimes I think I amaze myself. And then other days I'll walk around looking for my phone and it's in my hand.
Yeah.
Right. So good for you for asking questions.
I love it. That's a great, great word of wisdom. How about you, Randy?
Well, I'm going to credit my former college boxing coach, who just taught me there's plenty of pie to go around.
Uh-huh.
He was always great at
giving
and sharing and thanking and showing that there's just plenty for everybody.
Plenty
it
for
can
everyone.
Be win-win. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's a great point.
It's a huge point. It's something that I know for...
That's Ed Wishers.
Yeah. Give props.
Former coach. Give credit where credit's due.
Absolutely.
Nice.
It's all about creating win-wins. I love it. Well, thank you both so much for making time in your busy schedules to share your insights and wisdom and life experience with our listeners and us here in the studio today. So I thank you both so much
for
that.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you.
Appreciate
Wonderful.
It.
Well, perfect. Well, thank you again for listening. This is the Leadership Lowdown that you've been listening to, hosted by me, Jody Lowe, and powered by You and Improved. At You and Improved, we are passionate, extremely passionate about partnering with companies' leadership to develop their most valuable asset, which is, of course, their people. And to learn more about our personal and professional development classes and trainings, you can visit us at youandimprove.com, or feel free to contact me at jody@youandimprove.com. Again, thank you for listening, and we look forward to talking with you soon.